what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, this was clearly a short notice gig for Dylan, and that means it's got to be a short lesson. And that accounts for some of the smiles that I'm seeing in the audience, I'm sure. And so I will assure you that my intent is not for this to go very long at all, but hopefully to dig into some portions of Christ's teaching in specific and allow that to be not only thought-provoking, but to cause some self-assessment and potentially some takeaway action on each of our parts. So we're going to be looking at some of Christ's earliest teaching and some of his latest teaching, in particular out of the book of Matthew. So if you would grab your Bibles, this is going to be a read-along event. I want you to look personally and specifically at the text that we're going to look at, and then really for us to take some things and just to think about. Think about to what extent is what Christ is teaching reflected within my own life. Okay? And so we are in Matthew chapter 5, will be the first portion of our lesson. And this, of course, is the beginning of the recorded teaching that we have of Christ. We often refer to this as the Sermon on the Mount in chapters 5, 6, and 7. And as you go through, and the more that you put into Christ's teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, the more you realize just how, in many ways, it's been described as revolutionary and just astonishing in the context of what man would otherwise ever describe or think, right? It really is. And you can never get all that there is to get out of it. I want to pick up at the tail end of what we tend to describe as the Beatitudes. And thus we're going to read from Matthew chapter 5, beginning of verse 10, we're going to read down through verse 16 to get some of our first takeaways here today. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men cast insults at you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? It is good for nothing anymore, except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So let's look at these verses a little bit more closely in order to derive some of what Christ wants us to consider and think about. And the first there, in verses 10 and 11, is very specific to persecution. Blessed are those who've been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So, when we live righteously, some persecution will be derived, but the result is the kingdom of heaven. Okay? And then in verse 11, he goes on to describe this persecution in greater depth. Blessed are you when men cast insults at you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me. So two causes, righteousness and on account of Christ, will bring persecution. And in verse 11, it says, you're blessed when men cast insults at you. That means that people are going to malign you. They are going to insult you for what you believe and for who you are. And they are going to persecute you. That means they're going to seek to do you harm. And they may actually do you harm because of Christ's righteousness reflected in your life on account of Christ. And they're going to say all kinds of evil against you falsely. They're going to make things up about you. And they're going to seek to hurt you in that way. They're going to present false allegations against you. They're going to misrepresent you. And they're going to do that because they do not like that you are living in such a way that depicts your faith in Christ. Okay? And Christ says, blessed are you when that happens, for ultimately yours is the kingdom of heaven. So here's my question to begin with, to what extent have we had persecution in our lives? And in some ways, we have. I think we probably got several in our audience who have had others mistreat us or seek to do us harm because of what we believe, because of who we are as Christians. I think that happens. We certainly don't see it the way that we see reflected in the among Christians in the first century, at least within our world, for the most part, within the United States. In many ways, we've been blessed as a nation that has historically revered God to be free of many of the forms of persecution that we have seen others have to endure because of their faith. I'd suggest to you that we're beginning to see that change within our country. How many of you here have lost a job because of what you believe? Probably not many. Maybe. Possibility is there. Okay. How many have lost a promotion opportunity? That may be possible. Okay. I've had a conversation with at least one in our number who, very realistically, because he's very open about what he believes, that may have cost him the opportunity that he would have been very competitive for in that promotion. Tough to know for sure, but very easy to see things like that happen, right? Okay. But has anyone been thrown in jail? Okay. Certainly none have lost their lives in the scope of our immediate influence, right? Or experience, I should say. And so my question for you is, or what I want for us to think about, and I think about this in the context of my own life, and that's ultimately what causes me to draw attention to these texts. If we are not being persecuted very much at all, is that simply a reflection that we live in a country, in an environment where that type of persecution tends not to be? Or is it a reflection that we are not presenting ourselves the way Christ understood that Christians would present themselves and therefore be persecuted? If a lack of persecution within our life is a reflection of, you know, a blessed period, you know, in the context of our life, that's one thing. But if no one has ever said anything that would misrepresent or malign us because of our faith in Christ, if no one has ever sought to do us harm in one way or another, if that reflects that we have been awfully quiet about who we are and what we believe, then I expect we're not living up to what Christ is describing, those who would be persecuted for his name's sake would take place. Okay. So it's within that context, when he says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for my name's sake," that he then goes on to talk about that we are to be lights unto the world and salt. Okay, but you notice he doesn't get right. He goes from verses 10 and 11, specific about persecution, but he does not get straight to verse 16. Verse 16 is the conclusion. "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." He says, "Let your light shine so that others will see what you are doing and know that is to the glory of God," and they will respond in that way. Okay? Before that, he gets right to a negative description of salt. He goes straight from this risk and reality of persecution in verses 10 and 11, and he says in verse 12, "Rejoice and be glad." This is continuing. "Rejoice and be glad because of that persecution, for your reward in heaven is great, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." But then verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again?" He gets right to the possibility that the salt loses its effect. He says, "Blessed are you when you are going to be persecuted for my name's sake. Your reward in heaven is great. But if salt loses its impact, it is worth nothing and should be thrown out." Okay? Thus the middle of verse 13. Okay, if let me just pick up the beginning of verse 13. "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? It is good for nothing anymore except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men." And then he goes to his next metaphor. "You are the light of the world." But then he describes, and I think he's what Christ is presenting is he understands we have a natural tendency to want to dampen our light and to dampen the effect of salt. Because right what he gets to is, you're the light of the world. A city sit on the hill cannot be hidden, nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. That is how light is to be. Therefore, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And when they see that righteousness, then persecution is going to result. So Christ understands that when we are confronted with persecution or difficulty because of our faith and the way that we present ourselves and what we believe, living righteously according to the way God intends, Christ understands that that's going to be hard. And that hardness may make us not want to present ourselves in such a way as to make the impact that he wants for us to make. When you think about the impact of light and of salt, both of these descriptions of us that Christ calls for us to be, salt affects. When salt is applied, it preserves, it protects, it flavors, okay? It has an impact. Salt is not passive. Salt is not indirect. Salt has a positive effect on what it touches, okay? And light impacts darkness. Light mitigates the effect of darkness, and the more light that you have, the less darkness that you have. Okay, we've got a couple light bulbs out in our garage, and they used to have a motion sensor so you could just open the door and walk into the dark and the light would come on, and those bulbs are out, and Colin has not yet replaced those bulbs. And so now you walk out and I'm in the habit, and therefore, I'm fumbling around for the light switch that will turn the other light bulbs on. And you get to that light switch, and you appreciate, because that garage otherwise is pitch dark, right? And you know you're about to step down into that. You appreciate the effect even of one minor light bulb, okay, in the midst of darkness. That's what light does. Light overcomes darkness. It ultimately defeats darkness. So Christ calls us to have that impact, okay, to have that positive influence. But I wonder, sometimes, do we look at this, we are to be light of the world, and we think of that in kind of a passive way. That we think, you know, I'm a good person. I know that people know that I'm a Christian, and they appreciate that, and we even have some good conversations about things. But then what's the real impact? Okay. Now let's look toward the end of Christ's teaching in Matthew chapter 28. In fact, let's turn over to Matthew chapter 28, but hold your finger there, because I also want to draw briefly attention to the parallel passage, which is Mark 16. And when Jim had asked me this morning, before we began our worship, I was thinking in terms of Mark 16 and Matthew 28, before our 8 verses this morning that Jared presented, so perfectly connected. This, of course, is after Christ has been crucified and he's been resurrected. And you know, his disciples, those that were closest to him, they didn't understand that he was going to be resurrected. That was a difficult thing. They felt defeated, okay? And he ends up correcting them and chiding them, okay? Sometimes we look at that and we think, I can't believe that they did not believe. And you know what? We would have been the very same. We would have been the very same as those closest to him. So, in verse 14 of Mark chapter 16, and afterward he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at the table, and he reproached them for their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they had not believed those who had seen him after he had risen. And he said to them, go into all the world. Now, who's he talking to here, by the way? In verse 14, who's he talking to specifically? He's talking to the 11, okay? And he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he who has disbelieved shall be condemned. Okay? This is what we often describe as the Great Commission. He says, go out into the world and preach the gospel to all. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. He who does not believe shall be condemned. So Matthew, back in Matthew chapter 28, he captures these same thoughts presented by Christ, but not exactly the same way. He adds some additional detail, And I expect that in the midst of the days that Christ was with his apostles and his disciples after his resurrection, that he was emphasizing this in different ways and reiterating it in different ways. Okay? But Matthew chapter 28, one of the details that Matthew records for us, brings this home even more closely to us. So let's read Matthew's account there. We'll begin in verse 16 of Matthew chapter 28. But the 11 disciples proceeded to Galilee, to the mountain which Jesus had designated. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some were doubtful. And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." Okay? So let's look closely. Two action verbs in verse 19. Okay? What are the two things that Christ is commanding the 11 with him here to do? What are the two verbs here? They're the two actions. The first is to go. Okay? Go out ultimately into all the world. Okay? And what is the second? To go, okay? We know from Mark as well, to preach the gospel, but to make disciples. Okay? To make disciples. And then the very next phrase is what we describe in grammar as an appositive, okay? Where one thing describes the other. How is it that they are to make disciples? Baptizing them, okay? That making disciples, okay? Baptism is that step, okay? That results in becoming a disciple. And as we looked and we're studying today, that's not it entirely. Now, who is Jesus giving this command to? Who's he talking to here in Matthew 28? The same 11. The same 11. But now look at verse 20. Who is it that's supposed to carry this out? What in verse 20 is Jesus telling them? After they've gone out and made disciples, then what is their action? It is to teach those disciples to do all that I have commanded you to do. So Jesus is telling the 11, go out, preach the gospel, okay? Teach them the truth, they will respond, make disciples, and when they've become disciples, teach them to do the same. Sometimes we tend to think that the role of going and making disciples, and it's an entirely additional discussion to talk about how do you go, because there are a lot of ways to go, okay? A lot of ways we contribute to this action, okay? Sometimes we tend to think of, you know, if you've got everybody in a congregation, okay, each person is a dot, here's our congregation, okay, that the role of going and teaching and making disciples is just obviously the preacher, and there's some elders, you know, and maybe that's a role we think of as the deacons, and that's kind of what some others do. But that's not really what I do. And that's not what Jesus is teaching. Jesus is teaching that this go and make disciples is the responsibility of all of us. Okay? It's all of our responsibility to do that. Now, to connect this back to Matthew chapter 6, part of what made me thinking about these particular texts, and I can't remember the details of exactly what this individual had to say, but it was a quick blurb on the radio, and the gentleman was saying, you know, I just know that as long as I am a good person, then I am being a light to the world as Jesus wants me to be, and that I will therefore be with him. And I just thought, is that it? Is it enough? Is Matthew 28 a synonym? Is it the same as Matthew chapter 5? If we are being light and salt, Okay. Are we necessarily going and making disciples? Or do sometimes we think, I'm being light and salt, I'm being a good positive influence, but we're really not taking the gospel and making disciples, but we think we are because we're being light and we're being salt. And maybe we're not having the impact that we really think that we are, or that Christ expects that we should, so much that even we'll be persecuted sometimes because of it. If you follow the thought that I want to provoke here a little bit, right? You can work in a place for decades, and people know that you are a good spiritual person, a righteous person, okay? And when they have someone in their family who dies, you express condolence, and you say, my thoughts and prayers are with you, and they appreciate that. And maybe you even have conversations with folks that you work with, okay, about spiritual things, and they appreciate talking with you. And at the end of all of those years, you sit back and you ask, have I gone and have I actually made disciples? Maybe I've had some positive effect, but have I really carried out what Christ has called for us to do? I sure wonder that about myself in many ways, right? I think sometimes we hide behind, or the potential exists that we can look at Matthew 5 and conclude, I'm being the light, I am a good, righteous person. Others are able to see that, and then we stop there. So part of what we're hoping, our adult class on Sunday mornings, Jared is presenting a lot of great context and understanding that's going to prove very helpful in our efforts to go and make disciples. Okay? And I can't remember all the details of this conversation, but part of this derives, you know, we had Brent Hunter here a couple years ago, and he was presenting his material that he has used with a lot of success in introducing people to the gospel. And he's talked about how other congregations have taken his material, okay, and used it with success. And so what we've done, what Jared's been working on at the request of the elders in particular, is to kind of really customize potentially a little bit different approach, but ultimately it's still a presentation of the gospel, right, with the same desired outcome to simply go and teach. And there's a wide variety of ways to do this. But we may ask ourselves, wow, look at, you know, that group, that congregation, they're using this material and they're having great results. Shouldn't we therefore be using that same material? That's just, the material is just the technique, okay? It's the content, okay, that ultimately has the effect. That's the power of the gospel, is the gospel, okay? It's not a magic particular presentation or program. It's simply exposing people to the gospel. But what those congregations are doing, when Brent describes, hey, I went here and this has been the result, and where I'm at, we've had this great result in the last 3 years since I've been there. What they're doing is they're going. They are just engaging in conversations more than they had before. They are doing more than just being that passive positive influence. They're taking proactive steps to engage folks and ascertain, would they be interested in studying? Would they like to hear something about the Bible if they have not before? Would they like to study a particular topic? Do they have interest in even investing some small period of time? Right? That's the go. And the result is disciples are being, you know, future disciples are being exposed to the gospel, and they're responding just the way that Christ intends. Okay? It's not the flip chart or the particular technique. It's just the effort to go and make disciples, and therefore be a salt and a light in that way, very proactively as a result. Okay? So my encouragement to us all this afternoon is just to think about that relationship between our being the light and salt that Christ calls for us to be, and having that positive impact, that effect that others are going to see and ultimately glorify God, and ensuring that that also is reflected in our efforts to go and share the gospel with others so that others will respond and become disciples of Christ. Okay? I'll throw out as well one more final thought. We've had a lot of growth here in Northside. We've been here now plus years, our family, and you see the numbers are growing. It's, you know, there are many a Sunday morning where we are just about at full capacity here. That's a wonderful thing. I do wonder, the growth that we are getting, what portion of that growth is derived by our being a passive positive influence for good? Others moving into the area, they like what they see here. They want to be a part of it, and they join us. But I don't know how much of it, of our growth, is because we are making disciples. We've had conversions within our families, which of course we want that. Okay? Children being raised in the church, ultimately making their own decision to obey the gospel. But most of our growth has not been because we've been making disciples. We've had a few. And there are a lot of efforts going on that most of us are just not well exposed to, and we should be thankful for that. But I'd suggest we need more of our growth to be from the going. And therefore, let's think about to what extent are we doing the going that Christ calls for us to do. Okay, that's plenty. And that's for me as well. I'm not thinking of anyone else in particular besides myself, other than to present these thoughts from Christ. There may be some here in our audience that recognize, you know what, you just need the prayers and the encouragement of your fellow brethren here. It may be something in particular that you've been struggling with, difficulties, that you know you would just simply benefit from that encouragement, from that prayer. It may be a recognition that you've been falling short concretely in ways that are separating you from God, and you want to convey that repentant heart and ask for those prayers and therefore petition God for that forgiveness. There may be some that recognize that you need to respond to the gospel in the first place, that you need to become a disciple of Christ in order to then carry out the work that he calls for us to do. If you have either of those reasons, we certainly encourage you to come forward and share those with us. That's why we like to wrap up with this song of invitation. Let's go ahead and stand and sing.
So